Let me say it again. According to the latest numbers from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 40% of American adults will be obese by the year 2030, if current trends hold. All this week, we're looking at how growth in body size is changing all kinds of planning assumptions in the U.S. economy. Yesterday, we spoke with an MIT mathematician whose fresh approach to obesity has put him on the public health team at the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive Kidney Diseases. Dr. Carson Chow told us yesterday that finding the right model, the right set of equations to track food availability with aspects of human metabolism allows planners to test assumptions and simulate policy changes that might have an impact on the obese population or even prevent obesity from happening at all.
When you take in food, you eat carbs, protein, and fat, and they either get burned just to keep you alive and do your daily activities, or anything that you eat that's in excess of what you need gets partitioned into some of the tissue.
Dr. Chow there, a mathematician, had a similar conversation with some reporters at the New York Times, which quickly became the most emailed item at the Times website, which seems to have alarmed Michael Moyer, senior editor at Scientific American, who joins us now in the studio. Mathematician, talking about public health seems to have rung some bells for you a little bit.
Well, I think that Dr. Chow's analysis is important, but I think that it's a little simplistic, and I think that some of the things that he talks about, for instance, in the New York Times interview, is trying to make the equations as simple as possible. Now, as we know, obesity and metabolism isn't really all that simple. And specifically, he has the assumption that calories in minus calories out equals fat, and that has this entrenched assumption that all calories are equal. And a lot of work in biochemistry, in the study of metabolism, has been showing that all calories are not really equal, and we need to be able to split out the kinds of calories that we're eating to be able to have a better idea of what we should be eating and about how the best policy ways are to solve this obesity crisis.
Is that complexity, though, is the way that you describe it, run the risk of suggesting to the population that's at risk here that these kinds of things are unknowable? It's so complex that you can't really understand what's going on, so you might as well just do the best you can and, you know, wake up 20 years later and you weigh 300 pounds.
Well, I think there's no magic bullet, and I don't think anyone working in obesity would say that. However, if we have this approach of the mathematician or the physicist, the thermodynamics diet, right, basically use more calories than you burn, you run the risk of not being able to tackle the problem because clearly this message is not working. Right, it's very hard for people to be able to come down and reduce the amount of calories that they have because a lot of the calories that we're eating have an effect on our bodies that make us hungrier later on. Right, specifically, I'm talking about a lot of the processed carbohydrates we eat, a lot of the sugars. These foods create insulin spikes, and what happens after you have them is that the glucose that you eat goes into your fat cells, and then 2 hours later you're hungry. It's the old Chinese food bit, right? After you eat Chinese food, you're hungry 2 hours later. Well, this is happening to us on a nationwide scale, and this is the sort of problem that we have that's not really best addressed by looking at calories in minus calories out.
Senior editor at Scientific American, Michael Moyer, joins us. We're talking about the CDC obesity statistics. More than 40% of American adults will be obese by the year 2030. I heard Dr. Chow also saying, though, Dr. Carson Chow, the mathematician that you're critiquing this morning, saying that, you know, what we do need, and mathematics can be a useful tool here, are models so that we can simulate policies and inputs to the system that might actually have an impact rather than just, you know, whacking people over the head with behavioral messages that, you know, can't necessarily be distinguished from the noise of food marketing, which is a much, much more powerful message. Isn't mathematics a useful tool here, particularly since we're talking about a mass scale population? We're not talking about a real subset.
One of the really important conclusions that Dr. Chow comes to, I think, is this abundance of food idea that he has, and that we're producing so much food, especially since the 1970s, and all these excess calories are coming in and making us fat. And I think that's true, but not necessarily for the reasons that he cites. If you look at the types of calories that we're supporting in something such as the Farm Bill, right, which is up for debate again this year, we're spending $5 billion as a nation in direct payments to to the producers of commodity crops such as corn and soy, and that corn is
which
we've done for years, and initially as a way to be able to feed the nation. Well, we're feeding the nation pretty well right now, but it's these cheap calories, right? It's the cheap calories that come in the terms of these processed flours and the corn syrups that go into so many products that we have now. These cheap calories are the ones that are spectacularly bad for us. And you have a farm bill that supports these calories and really doesn't do anything for what all nutrition researchers agree we should be eating more of, which is fruits and vegetables and whole grains.
So the math is clear. Michelle Obama should probably spend a little less time doing music videos for kids, which is important, and focusing on shutting down the farm bill and these subsidies. But the president is, you know, not really taking much time on the farm bill, and there's all this kind of feel-good stuff. The math would say you got to spend way more time on this subsidy side of the equation.
In this month's Scientific American, our House editorial basically says the government is working at cross purposes. You have these public health messages coming out and saying we should be eating fewer of these calories and fewer of these bad calories. And on the other hand, you have the government giving $5 billion in subsidies to these bad calories. And until we resolve that, this obesity crisis is going to continue.
As a Scientific American senior editor, can we unpack the bad calories thing here in the minute before we go? It's not so much bad calories. It's that we are evolved to expect the availability of those kinds of carbohydrates to be very episodic, very few and far between. But when you create a food system that keeps those calories, those super calories, you know, around all the time, you're going to have problems.
Right, exactly. I mean, all things in moderation, but it's just so hard to avoid the types of calories that really spike your insulin. And what insulin does is it brings these calories into fat cells, and then you find that you have low blood sugar because all your blood sugar has been pulled into fat cells, and so then you're hungry again a little bit later. And so it's this mechanism, and then over time, of course, you become inured to insulin, and so
and then we got the diabetes
more
problems,
and
which we also
get diabetes.
You're going to make peace with Dr. Chow?
I think Dr. Chow is doing great work. I just think that some more nuance in the equations would be useful.
Michael Moyer, senior editor at Scientific American, continuing our discussion of the sort of sociological and scientific implications of the obesity figures. More than 40% of American adults will be obese by the year 2030. Join the conversation, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.